Now, we were mentioning melons, we were mentioning cheese, we were mentioning eggs, all of these things that Arizona produces. But, man, I just wish there was a place I could go find where I could get it locally. I mean, you walk into the store and there's hundreds of brands and you don't know what's local. I just wish we had a tool to help with that.
Cheese curds at Milk and More on 2008 South Hardy Drive in Tempe.
How'd you know that? See, there's no way to know all that.
I know. Well, that's what I'm in the business about, to promote our Arizona agriculture. But that's the funnest little store, and it's hosted by United Dairymen of Arizona. And you can go in there and buy some of their local cheese. And we also actually have a Greek yogurt plant in Casa Grande, and so for the yogurt. But again, quality dairy, because we have quality dairy farmers here in Arizona.
Well, that I'll put that on my to-do list. I'll make one website where I could just go on and plug in a zip code and pick a product, and bam, it'll give me a local resource.
We kind of do that on Fill Your Plate. There's a searchable database for all of our products, and Fill Your Plate is probably the best place to go.
But already exists. All right, fillyourplate.org.
Thank you. Okay, I haven't finished my coffee.
He was baiting that hook for a long time. Baiting that hook. She finally
bit. I'll get there.
Milk and More.
Yes.
Is the name of the store. And where is it?
It's on 2008 South Hardy Drive in Tempe.
I wonder if they have whole buttermilk.
You know, they might.
Are you still working on that for me?
I will work on that for you.
I found whole buttermilk at Sings.
Hey, that is a great website. Besides the farm products, you can find the farmers markets and the recipes. They have so many good recipes on there. I just can't get enough of them.
And most of our recipes are ones that our farmers and ranchers provided for us, by the way. So, yes, there's a lot of websites with recipes, but ours are special because they're from our Arizona farmers and ranchers.
Well, I'm going to have to go take a trip to this Milk and More, too. We have recently started making cheese just as a way to do something with all the goat milk that we get from two goats. We threw away 2 gallons in the last 2 weeks.
Uh-oh.
And we give milk to Mom. We give milk to my sister. We drink it in the morning. And we've just had more.
How many goats?
Just two.
Oh, my goodness.
Just two.
So connect with Rhonda and Wendell Crow, who have Crow's Dairy. They would prefer to sell you their own goat milk, but you can get some good insights about making real quality goat cheese and
it's a fascinating process. I've really enjoyed learning it. It's kind of long, and that's the one thing about it.
What's the name of the folks up at Strawberry?
Fossil Creek.
Fossil Creek.
Fossil Creek.
I've been there.
Can counsel you on how to make good goat cheese too. Yeah. You know, it's just smaller scale. Wendell will tell you the best. Wendell Crow will tell you the best story, because they used to have a bovine dairy, or you know, a cow dairy, and his wife talked him into doing a goat dairy, and he shook his head for a couple of years on that one, and now he's the best promoter of their goat milk and goat cheese. It's a pretty fun story.
1-888-767-4348. Let's get to Wayne in Phoenix on Lemon Trees. Good morning, sir.
Hello. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Oh, this past Sunday, there's an interesting article in the newspaper about the Curtis family that has Mission Citrus lemon groves in Yuma, and they're very concerned because the government of the United States might allow Argentine lemons to enter the United States market. There's been a ban on Argentine lemons because of bugs, and now the government of the United States might end that ban, and it's not good news for Arizona farmers, and I'm wondering what can Arizona do to keep out the Argentine lemons? I don't know if there's been a final decision to allow Argentine lemons to enter the market.
Well, you know, one thing you could obviously do would be to write letters to your congressman, to your senator, informing them of your concern about that. That's what we can all do on any issue, right? Mm-hmm. Just get involved and write letters and, contact, your local Congress guys. Just go through the proper channels. And believe me, that the guys at the Department of Agriculture are all over the citrus greening, the issues that they're dealing with citrus. They're on top of it. So
the Arizona Department of Ag truly is on top of issues like that. And just with any ag commodities you're exporting, you're importing, and But that's why we have an ADA and why we need that kind of a regulatory board or body to kind of protect us, protect our industries, protect our farmers. But at the same time, too, we also want to make sure that we're able to export to a variety of countries. And
now, there is a relationship that y'all do have that goes along with the Department of Ag. But talk about that difference real quick, because his question may have really been more for Mark Killian, the director
Correct.
Of the Department of Agriculture,
right.
than the Farm Bureau, which is who you represent. So talk very about good, the difference there.
Very good question. ADA is more of the regulatory body, and Farm Bureau is more of a lobbying and advocacy group on behalf of our farmers and ranchers. And we're, by the way, about 3 or 4 years away from celebrating our 100th year, so we've been around for some time. In fact, consistently a little bit longer than ADA. But again, those two different roles that these two organizations, and we're nonprofit, we're private. Obviously, ADA is a governmental body. But we really work in collaboration, again, on behalf of our Arizona families, because we all want to eat, and on behalf of our Arizona farmers and ranchers.
And one little point he said that I'll, and then we'll move on to Tina, who's next on the line, is he was saying they're making this trade to open up the citrus lemons from Argentina. I guarantee you the issue is probably a lot more complicated than that, and nothing in writing says we're bringing in lemons from Argentina. It's probably a much bigger conversation and topic, and it's probably one little tiny part in a big piece of paperwork.
Exactly. And one that's a little bit more complex than my brain can get around at times.
So we'll schedule
Mark. We appreciate his concern, and
yeah,
I think
he should
talk to, write a letter to the Department of Agriculture, to Director Killian, and to his congressman, and stay on top of it.
There you go.
We can solve it with a lemon wall.
There you go.
Yeah.
Or maybe we just outgrow the number of lemons they produce, and then
yes.
we start shipping. I don't know. Let's get to Tina, who's next on the line. Good morning, ma'am.
Hey, good morning. Around early May, I got some 5-gallon, 2 5-gallon hibiscus and 2 5-gallon bottle brush bushes to put in some pots around my pool, and was told that they would, they would tolerate the summer heat. With proper watering, of course. And they were doing just great, growing really well until 120 degrees hit the valley. And I know that the bottle brush tend to be pretty drought tolerant, don't like a lot of water, but they all are just suffering horribly. I don't know if I've killed them. I don't know if the heat killed them. I've been using a moisture meter, and the moisture around the roots seems to be pretty steady. But what can I do, A, to determine if I've killed them or the heat has killed them, or what can I do to help try to revive them?
Well, is there any green leaves left on them? Are there any green leaves?
There's green on two. One of the bottle brush and one of the hibiscus seems to be doing better, although they all sit in full sun. There is some green at the top of the bottle brush and at the, around the hibiscus. There's a lot of dead. But the other two, I think, maybe are gone. I don't see much green. I've been watching for it everywhere. But the bottle brush has dropped all of its leaves and greenery.
Well,
so
even,
I just don't know.
Even very heat-tolerant plants that are, when they're in containers, the container's hot, the container's also drying out much quicker than being in the ground. And with those kind of temperatures, I wouldn't even trust a moisture meter. I mean, those pots probably needed water every day. Even how big are the pots?
Well, I don't know the size of them exactly, but they're probably 2 feet high, and about maybe 18 inches.
Okay, so they're not okay. So those are reasonably good sized pots.
Yeah.
Are you hand watering them, or are they on like a drip system? Or
no, I've been hand watering them. We don't have drip running into the area around the pool.
Okay. Well. Like I think I mentioned earlier, in that we could barely keep things watered in the nursery, and we were watering 2 and 3 and 4 times some plants. And unfortunately, if you're gone at work all day and that plant got stressed in the middle of the day and it still went a number of hours before, and it was 105 at 10 o'clock at night.
I know.
Pretty tough.
I was watering them all in the morning, hopefully that they would get a good, nice watering in the morning. I'm home all day, so I could probably watch them wilt.
Well, one thing you might consider doing if it gets that hot again, since they are in pots, is to literally move the pots into a shadier spot for a few days. I mean, we're talking this happened over the course of a week. Now it's much different. And so I hesitate to tell you to go change a lot of watering now because, you know, it's more humid, it's cooler. So it's just one of those things you have to monitor. And I just tell people when it gets over about 110, throw all of your watering schedules, all of your rules out the window and just get out there and start watering stuff till that goes away.
Now she planted just this spring, so she has probably fairly new soil. It's probably got some good supplements, but on pots, you have to fertilize constantly. That constant water leaches everything out.
You do need to fertilize more regularly. You probably want to wait on a stressed plant like that now till it starts to put on some new growth. And she might be surprised. One thing we should have told her to do is to actually go out and kind of scratch the branches and the trunks of those and make sure if they're still green underneath there, they might recuperate. Now, if there's no leaves left on them, I would definitely move them into a shadier spot until they leaf back out and then maybe kind of ease them back out into the sun.
Now, you had mentioned earlier when we were talking about farming and Julie was talking about, you know, we don't produce as much as a California or a Florida. You'd made a great point as we went to break that if you look at, you know, Florida's maybe 7 feet above sea level at the highest elevation. We've got elevations up to 14,000 feet and with the rock and the different layouts of our terrain. You can't farm on 100% of our state.
Well, in national forest and federal lands and Indian lands, and there's a lot of non-agricultural, non-farming going on. If you take the whole state of Arizona, it's a big state. You know, there's a lot of it that's not in agriculture.
Right. It's in our private lands, our tribal lands, but we can produce a lot in a small unit because we have managed conservation irrigation.